Tucker, are you ready to read for us this morning? We'll be reading from Psalms 139, verses 1 through 3.
I'll be reading from Psalms 139, 1 through 3. Lord, you have seen what you have seen is in my heart. You know all about me. You know when I sit down and when I get up. You know I'm thinking even though you are far away. You know when I go out to work and you know when I come back home. You exactly how I live.
Good morning. It's been some time since I've been up here. I was up here on my birthday last November. Glenn asked me a few minutes ago, I said, is your sermon this time going to be as good as that one? No. Oh, by the way, happy birthday, Arch. Oh, I heard somebody at work talking one day, and they were talking about this guy, this Ken Jennings. You remember that guy? Ken Jennings is the guy who was on Jeopardy and won, I think, $3 million or something. He must be the smartest guy in the world. I said, really? Why is that? Well, he knows all that stuff. What does he know? Lots of trivia. He knew thousands of trivia questions, and he answered them. And if you had ever heard him interviewed, he used to stand behind his couch when he was watching Jeopardy, and he had a little thing that he made out of a broom handle with a button on the top. He practiced. And he practiced for years before he stepped up on Jeopardy to play. What did he know? A lot of stuff. He ever put it to use? Well, he made $3 million off it. Other than that, I don't know what good it is for anybody. Does anybody really care what the name of the Nile River is before it's changed to the Nile? Is it going to change your life if you know which tribe it was that was involved in the massacre of Custer? I mean, what difference does it make? Maybe something, maybe nothing. You know, when I was a little bitty kid, I think everybody will relate to this one, I thought my mom knew everything. Anybody ever try and get away with something from your mom? Ever get caught? Yeah, I was wondering where she had those cameras and where the mirror was that she saw me no matter where I was, who she was talking to, you know. Could never get away with a thing. But as I grew up, I found out she wasn't. I was raised in a congregational church when I was a kid. And the congregational church, among other things, taught us that God's omniscient. That's something that I learned there. And eventually I learned that my mom wasn't. It took some time, but I finally got to that point. Omniscience is an interesting thing. And I'd like to talk about the omniscience of God a little bit today. If you'd like a title for the sermon, let's call it God Knows. If you'd like a reason for me to preach this sermon, it's because, yeah, we know that God knows, but we forget that God knows. And we forget some of the things that God knows. Most of the time when we talk about the fact that God knows, we are probably talking about the fact that we're looking in the book and the scripture says what God knows. Or we're talking about the prophecies. We're studying Ezekiel and Jeremiah and Daniel on Sundays and Wednesdays. And God knows a lot. It tells a lot in those books. God knows. But when it comes to my daily life, how often do I remember? God knows. God knows the answers to all of them. I had a teacher once in preacher school who was sitting there one day looking at his Bible. And he had it up like this. And there was 12 students in the class and we're all sitting there looking, what's going on? And he said, you know, when I wrote that note, God knew what it meant and I knew what it meant. God still does. God knows. But what does God know? Well, let's start with point number one. God knows my actions, my thoughts, my deeds, my desires, everything, the moment I think of them. Before I do the deed, God already knows it. It's one of the things we usually think about when we think about God knowing, but it might not be as deep as we thought. I mean, we don't usually think as deep as it is. I'm going to read a little more of that psalm that Tucker read this morning, and thank you very much, Tucker. That was a nice job. Psalms 139. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and know me. Thou dost know when I sit down and when I rise up. Thou dost understand my thoughts from afar. Thou dost scrutinize my path and my lying down, and art intimately acquainted with my ways. Even before there was a word in my tongue, behold, O Lord, Thou dost know it all. Thou hast enclosed me behind and before and laid Thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too high. I cannot attain it. Where can I go from Thy Spirit, or where can I flee from Thy presence? If I ascend to heaven, Thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, Thou art there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, even there will Thy right hand lead me, and Thy right hand will lay a hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, to Thee. Night is as bright as day, and darkness and light are alike to Thee. For Thou didst form my inward parts. Thou didst weave me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to Thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are all Thy works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from Thee when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought from the depths of the earth. Thine eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in Thy book they were all written. The days were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. How precious also are Thy thoughts to me, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would outnumber the sands of the seas. I'm skipping down to verse 23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my anxious thoughts. And see if there be any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way. I was about 19 years old, 20 years old, sitting in a car with a friend of mine one day. And I had been done some drastic wrong by some guy I worked with. I don't remember much about it except the line that I'm going to give you in a few minutes. And I was declaring to my friend, this is what I'm going to do to him. And this, and this, and when I'm done, and my friend said, hey, let it go. Drop it. Forget it. I said, how can I do that? He did this to me. And he said, so what? God knows. And God can take care of it a lot better than you can. I've never forgotten that. There are times I would like my vengeance. I would like to get my revenge on somebody for something they've done or said. But, you know, I can't do half as good a job as God can. When God gets good and ready to take care of somebody, it may be that the wrong was not a wrong. It may be that something that I saw was different than I saw it. God knows the right thing to do at the right time, in the right way. God knows my actions, my deeds, my passions, my thoughts, my ideas, before I form them, before I do them. He knows yours too. Second point. God knows my friends. You ever think about that? God knows your friends. During my childhood, my parents were concerned about the friends I hung around with. I didn't always hang around with the ones that were going to help me. And it was difficult sometimes to get me away from the ones that I wanted to hang around with and to the ones she thought I ought to be hanging around with. When I started really getting some friends and having a car so that I could go and come and bring friends by and let her know, she got to know most of my friends, and many of my friends were pretty good people. She got along well with them, I got along well with them. But if she had been omniscient, if she had known what we were doing when she wasn't there, when we were out in that car somewhere, she would have said, those are the wrong friends. God knows my friends. He knows, in 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And in 2 Corinthians 6:14, what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? If you ever make friends with somebody and then afterwards you realize, this really isn't the person I want for a friend. This friendship is not the friendship I'm looking for in my life. Something they have done or something they have said or some way they've treated me, Or just the way they act tells me this is not the right person to be hanging around with. I've done that. There are times I looked around and I said, what am I doing with this person? They're taking me in the wrong direction. Now, when I make a friend, I have an option of doing one of two things. I can do my dead level best to bring them to the Lord, or I can follow them. Well, it depends on how much influence who has on what. And God knows which way my friends are pulling me and which way I'm pulling my friends. And I wonder sometimes if the friends I've got are the ones that are going to help me the very best. I remember, probably shouldn't tell this story. I remember coming home from work one time and I was living with my sister and her boyfriend. And her boyfriend and I got to be very good friends. And I came home from work and I saw him sitting on the couch and he got a cross-eyed and goofy looking. He looked at me and said, want to smoke some opium? And that's not quite the kind of a friend you ought to have around you. Because my answer was, sure, why not? I spent about 2 years in some very strange places after that little introduction. And that friend was a lot of the one responsible for getting me in those strange places. And when I decided I didn't need to be there, I was glad to be out of there. When I decided to leave this lifestyle with drugs and foul language and alcohol and women, I threw a party. And I said, goodbye. I'm not going to see any of you anymore. They laughed at me. They said, you'll be here next week. I saw one of them about 15 years ago. The last time I've seen any of them. Oh, let me take it back. There was one other guy that I went back to after I became a Christian and converted him. His name is Charlie Mitchell. He's working with the Richfield Church in Minneapolis. Still love Charlie. Still glad to see him. But you know, God knows my friends. And He knows your friends. And He knows what your friends are doing to you and with you. So choose the right friends and stay with it. God knows, thirdly, my possessions. You know, most of us here in the United States, we can just about have anything we want. I mean, for the most part, we're a rich nation. Even those of us that are poor can figure out some way to get things that are luxuries, even to us. I asked somebody one day some question or another, and he said, how many televisions do you have? I didn't even know what the question was that brought it up. And I sat there and tried and counted. Now, I have a decent-sized house. I live in it. My wife lives in it. And Samantha lives there part of the time. That's it. We have 7 television sets. What do I need 7 TVs for? Target practice? I don't know why I've got 7 of them. I got them everywhere that I might sometime accidentally want to watch them while I'm doing something else. Give me a break. When I lived in Seattle, Washington, I lived out there for about 2 years working for Boeing Aircraft. And when I left, my two brothers came out and we got in my 1963 Chevrolet and we drove home. And I remember very clearly looking at that car, and I had a little trailer in the back, and it was a very little trailer because what I was carrying in the back was a 392 Hemi engine off of a 1960 Chrysler. Dual forebears. And I also had 2 little boxes back there and 2 little boxes in the trunk that I didn't want to get wet if it rained. And I looked at that and I said, this is the sum of my worldly possessions. 4 small boxes and an engine and a car. And I drove home. It just, you know, I don't know how I felt about that, but I looked at it and thought, this is America, I ought to have more than this. And I didn't. When I moved to preacher school, I had less than that. When I left preacher school, well, by then I had a wife, and you have a little bit more than that when you have a wife. You want to know how much stuff you've got in your house? You want to know how much I've got in mine? Let me give you a tip. I sold insurance for about 10 years, and I will tell you that if you have a fire or a tornado, the insurance company is going to hand you a form and say, what did you have? What did you lose? Go home, sit down before that fire, before that tornado, and fill out that form. You're going to be astonished at the stuff you got. You'd be just shocked at all that you have in your house. And God already knows what you've got. On top of that, He knows the stuff that's just stuff. He also knows the stuff that when the fire breaks out and the house is fully engulfed, that you'd run back in to get and bring back out. That's not just stuff. That is your idol. That is the thing that's more important to you than anything else. There's probably something in everybody's life that's just like that. In Luke 12:15, Jesus says, "Not even when one has abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Oh, it's hard to believe that. I heard Ron telling me once that at the end of school to be an engineer, is this the right story? When you have a teacher stand up and say, "You're going to start making a lot of money, and you need to know that money's not everything. Money's not going to make you happy." Is that pretty close? Money's not going to make you happy. But we keep trying, don't we? Jesus had to remind him 2,000 years ago, even when you have an abundance, your life doesn't consist of possessions. Matthew 16:26, "For what will a man be profited if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will man give in exchange for his soul?" That's the easy one. We think about that sometimes. But folks, if somebody walked up to you and said, "Bill Gates is going to hand you every dime he's got for your soul." Now, as we stand here and know that it's not going to ever happen, it'd be easy to say, "I don't want it." But if something happened that you suddenly became very wealthy, if Ed McMahon came knocking on your door, if publisher Harry Clayhouse walked in and said, "Here's a check for $10 million, and you have a lot," is it suddenly this place of the Lord? When my mother died, I got a small legacy. It wasn't huge, but it was more money than I'd ever seen before. And I'll tell you something, folks. When I come up with a need that I need to use some of that money, it just tears my heart out, because that's money that I want to save for something else. And I hate that. I don't want to have that attachment. I don't want to be tied to that money. I want to be able to say it's God's money. Use it any way you want to. And I have a hard, hard time with that. Tell me who isn't there. Tell me who doesn't have that problem. You see, God knows your possessions. He knows your possessions, if it's physical possessions, if it's emotional possessions, if it's financial possessions. God knows all of your possessions. And He knows which ones are the value to you and which ones are just possessions. Fourth point, last point. God knows me. There's an inscription, or there was an inscription before the building was torn down, on the oracle for Apollos at Delphi. Oh, most of you heard of the oracle of Delphi, and that's what this is. And the inscription on the base of the temple said, "Know thyself." Know thyself. Nice and simple. Know yourself. If it's so nice and simple, why do so many hundreds of thousands of psychologists and psychiatrists and counselors are making a great living counseling and helping people to try to know themselves? Why? Do you want to get to know me? Don't talk to me. I'm too close to me. I live within me like a magnifying glass. And the things that I don't want to see, I don't look at. You want to know me? Find somebody that knows me and ask them. Ask my wife. Ask my daughter. Samantha might be old enough, you can ask some of her. Some of the members of this body have been here long enough, and I have known them long enough that they know me. But I don't know me. I don't know what I would do in some situations, though I try to know. You ever watch the show Cops on Saturday nights? On last night? And the cops will stop somebody for doing something extremely stupid, usually. And the question is, "Why did you do that?" And the answer is usually the same. "I don't know." Why don't they know? Because they don't know themselves. The because you don't know you and I don't know me. When I... Let me give you one more, real quickly. I was watching a cowboy movie a while back, and I think it was The Magnificent Seven. And Steve McQueen is talking about a guy he knew that was walking along, and he jumped in a cactus bush, and rolled around, and jumped out. The guy said, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Well, it seemed a good idea at the time." That's the way most criminals are, and that's the way most of us are in some of the dumb things we do. We look around and say, "Why on earth did I do that?" Well, sure looked like a good idea at the time. Same psalm again. "O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou dost know me when I sit down, and when I rise up, Thou dost understand my thoughts from afar. Thou dost scrutinize my paths and my lying down, and art intimately acquainted with all my ways." You know, those of us who are blessed with a spouse, we know that spouse sometimes will tell us our faults. Our reaction to that tells us a lot. I don't know any man, woman, or child for that matter that likes to hear their faults. But if you react with anger, frustration, and turn it off, that's one reaction. If you react with, "I need to make some changes in my life," that's a different reaction. I don't think I have to tell you which one God would want you to do. With one proviso. If somebody says, "You're doing this wrong, better look here before you decide whether or not you're really doing it and whether you need to change it." Because this is what God knows too. And this is how we can know what God knows. Even people that are trying to be honest will find themselves lying to themselves. Because again, you're too close to yourself. I got two real quick illustrations on that one. I was listening to National Public Radio last night, and a lady had written a book. And this book was about a couple of women in, San Francisco, I think, who had run a brothel, sisters. And this was long after the fact that they had sold the brothel and they were now living their own lives in the Midwest somewhere. And somebody was interviewing them and they said, "You're the ones that ran..." And they, no, it wasn't us. It wasn't us. It was somebody else. And they believed it. There was absolute full evidence and full proof that these were the women, but they didn't think they were. They had forgotten it. Conveniently? Maybe. But they did forget it. They had lied to themselves and believed it. And also, on another show, I heard about a guy who was, I think he was in his early 70s. He was in a military retirement home. This guy had joined the Navy when he was young, 17, 18, 19, in 1940, 41, just before World War II. This guy had been a heavy drinker all his life. And he drank until the point that it started to destroy parts of his brains, and that's why he was in this home. But this man believed that it was 1940 or 41, whenever he was this young raw recruit. If he came up and talked to him and asked him how old he was, he would usually say 18 or 19. If you asked him what day it was, he knew the day of the month. He knew that it was Sunday or Wednesday. But he didn't know what year it was. It was always 1941, 42, 43. One of the doctors spent some extensive time with him one time, and when the man just insisted, "Oh, I'm 19 years old," he said, "Come with me." Stood him up, walked him over, looked in the mirror. Guy was shocked. Just literally white. "Oh, who's that? Who's that?" "That's you." "No, that can't be me." Well, it took the doctor some time to calm him down, and took the doctor some gentling to get him back into his chair. But within 15 minutes, without any medication, the guy was back to believing he was 18, 19 years old, a raw recruit again. Because his brain was gone. God gives us a mirror to look at. God gives us a mirror to look at to see how we see ourselves. And we... sometimes may react exactly the same way. I have. I have looked at that and said, that can't be me. But then I have to figure out if it really is and what I need to do to make it the picture that I need it to be. I mentioned that parents and children might not know themselves, but they know each other. I remember many things about my parents. And I want to tell you, as you get closer to my age, you will look and be very disconcerted when you walk up to a mirror door and see your dad walking towards you, or your mom. And I have that happen every so often at work. I have mirrored doors on my... And I look at that, and sometimes I say, I remember the faults and the foibles of my mom or my dad. I remember the things that they did that I think were wrong. Have I got them too? Do I have that in my life? No. I don't know. I try not to. I try to be what God wants. But God knows. And God will tell me. So here's a few things that God knows. He knows my actions, my passions, my deeds, my thoughts, before I have them. And He knows yours. He knows my friends, the ones that are good for me, the ones that are bad for me, the ones I should have for friends, the ones that I shouldn't have for friends. And He knows yours. He knows my possessions, what I count as just junk, and what I count as important to me. He knows what it is that I would go back into a flaming, burning house to rescue. And He knows yours too. And He knows me. He knows me better than I know myself, better than I possibly can. And He knows you also. You know, some of you know what God knows about you. Some of you know that you need to make some changes in your life. Some of you are afraid to do it. Because maybe you're afraid that we will know. Well, you know what? God knows already. That's more important than us. Some of you are afraid to walk down an aisle and stand up and say, I have done X, Y, Z. Some of you are afraid to come up and say, I need to get into the water and be immersed into Christ. By the way, water's right back there behind the screen. It's warm. I know how to baptize people. I've baptized a couple hundred over the years. So I know how to do it. I'm not going to drop anybody. I'm not going to drown anybody. But if that's the problem, God knows. God knows what you want. God knows when you will do it and when you should do it. And you know something? God knows the reaction you're going to have to this invitation right now. But I wish you'd surprise Him. I wish you'd come down and ask for the forgiveness and the help from the church. Now God also knows that if you're sitting in your chair and you know you've got a problem that you can deal with and you just can pray right there, that's fine. When I was in school, they used to say, public sin, public repentance. In other words, if you've done something that was so obvious that the church knows about it, that you ought to be coming down the aisle to talk about it. I don't know if I fully agree with that. In some ways, maybe I do. What I do know is that however you repent, and however you change, and however you come to God, God knows, and He wants you. And He wants you like He wants you. So if there's anything we can do to help you to put your knowledge and God's knowledge on an even keel, let's help Him do it right now. We stand together and sing.